listeners, let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Stephen Mosier, who has been on the front lines of this battle for trying to preserve human life for about 30 years since he was, studying over in China at the time that the first one-child policy came about, and he actually came back to the United States. He was working under the auspices of Stanford University, and he announced, of course, that China's one-child policy, where in many instances girl children were actually being aborted or killed because families could only have one child, and instead of being outraged against this policy, there was outrage against Stephen Mosier, and he, of course, lost his position at Stanford and was literally blacklisted with all of the universities. You're not supposed to tell the truth about this sort of thing, but that didn't certainly bother Stephen. He became in charge of the Population Research Institute and is on the front lines of this battle. It's been 30 years now, hasn't it, Stephen?
Well, it has. I was in China in 1979. The one-child policy began the year after, and that makes exactly 30 years. In fact, the Chinese Communist Party recently celebrated was their word, not mine, the 30th anniversary of the institution of the one-child policy, declaring it to be a great success and one that they wanted to continue on for a decade or more into the future.
Well, now, certainly this has created all sorts of problems, though, hasn't it, as far as too many boys, too few girls? A lot of young men will never be able to have a wife, and don't they still very ruthlessly implement this policy as far as the poor Chinese women are concerned?
Oh, absolutely. All of the abuses that I saw 30 years ago in China, I recorded again a few months ago when I went back to that country, the arrest of women for the crime of being pregnant. Outside the plan, out with the illegal children, the incarceration of women for the crime of being pregnant, sometimes for weeks, sometimes for months, until they submit to an abortion, forced abortions, taking women in by force to abortion clinics, giving lethal injections to women without their consent into the womb that results in the death of the unborn child, follow-up sterilizations, involuntary sterilizations to make sure that these women who committed the crime of getting pregnant would not commit that same crime again. All of these things that I saw for the first time 30 years ago, I have recent documented evidence, is still happening in China today, three decades later.
But what part has American policy played in implementing this? In other words, our funding of International Planned Parenthood, and weren't they instrumental in actually this whole program?
Well, it happens that radical environmentalism, which we know in the West, managed to worm its way into China in the late 1970s and ultimately provided the ideological justification for the one-child policy. The Club of Rome produced a report called Limits to Growth, which argued for strict population control programs. That report was translated into Chinese and convinced the Chinese leadership 30 years ago that they had no choice but to embark upon a one-child policy.
Yes, we can thank Maurice Strong for that. He was there. In fact, I understand he's living over in China at the present time. But anyway, of course, what about at the present time? International Planned Parenthood or any American policies favor this sort of thing? You would think that Americans would be horrified and we would cut off relations with China, try to do everything we can to stop it, but I just don't see us really doing anything about it.
Well, we haven't. And, of course, under this administration, the Obama administration, they've opened the funding spigots to the UN Population Fund and the International Planned Parenthood Federation, which have been in China since 1979, have
Hold that thought. Please go ahead. You were just saying that what was this fund in China?
Well, the International Planned Parenthood Federation and the UN Population Fund, the United Nations Population Control Organization, known for short as the UNFPA, those organizations arrived in China the same time I did in 1979. It took me a few months to figure out that this was the most barbaric population control program the world has ever seen. The Planned Parenthood Federation and the UN Population Fund became cheerleaders of the policy and began pumping tens of millions of dollars into China in support of the one-child policy. And, of course, we fund both organizations.
And that is what the average American really doesn't understand. And, Sidney, I know during the Bush administration there was at least a semblance of cutting off funds to the international organizations funding abortion, but then, of course, they always seem to find another organization pushing abortion that they could give the money to. But, you know, the incredible thing is that here in the United States, Planned Parenthood talks about choice, a woman's choice. And over in China, why, it's, of course, you're going to have an abortion or else. Why is that inconsistency? Why here do they talk about a woman's right to kill an unborn child, and over there they champion the Chinese government's killing of children? It's just inconsistent.
Well, it is, and I have a story to tell about that. When I first got back from China in the early 80s, I visited the headquarters of the National Organization of Women. I thought in my naivete that this organization that was dedicated to pro-choice would be devastated, would be very unhappy to learn that their sisters in China were being denied a choice for life. So I went to talk to the head of the organization, presented evidence, pictorial evidence, tape recordings of women being arrested for the crime of being pregnant, being forcibly aborted. When I got all done, the head of the organization was silent for a minute and said, "Well, I'm personally opposed to forced abortion," she said, "but after all, China does have a population problem." And at that point, I realized that these pro-choice organizations were only in favor of a choice for death, a choice for abortion, and they were not in favor of a choice for life.
Well, you know, it's so hard to really fathom, to believe this sort of thing. And I know when I first got started in this battle many years ago, I mean, it just didn't seem rational, didn't seem possible, because I was interested in the AIDS epidemic and the fact that they were not trying to stop the AIDS epidemic then and not trying to stop it today. But I don't want to get off onto a different subject, but it certainly is so incongruous that people would have no respect for human life, and yet this seems to permeate so many aspects of life, both throughout the world, but specifically here in America, where you would think that we would be championing the cause of life.
Well, you'd think so, and, you know, under Reagan and Bush 1 and Bush 2, we did provide evidence.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Stephen Mosher of the Population Research Institute, and he was just saying that certainly the National Organization for Women, you would think that they would be very concerned about a forced abortion in China, but they really weren't, and Planned Parenthood wasn't. And of course, it seems so difficult to understand that there really are people who seem to be pro-death. Well, after all, there are too many people in the world. China has a population control problem, so, we have to understand what they're doing and what right do we have to intervene, ideas of that sort. But Stephen was just saying that certainly under Bush 1 and the Reagan administration, were you able to have some impact at that time?
Well, we were able to provide evidence to those administrations that led them to cut off funding to the UN Population Fund. That funding cutoff was reinstituted under Bush 2, and unfortunately, it has now been held in abeyance. But over the course of 30 years, we have, for at least half that time, a little more, been able to stop the funding from going indirectly from U.S. taxpayer pockets into China's one-child policy. The funding is now flowing again, but we'll see if come January with the new Congress we can't, once again with new evidence of the UN Population Fund's involvement in forced abortion, forced sterilization in China, once again cut off that funding. I think, you know, if you put this to a vote, the American people would overwhelmingly be opposed to supporting forced abortion.
But it seems that our leaders are intent upon doing everything they can to help the totalitarian regime over there in China, and that's the great tragedy. Both Democrats and Republicans have pushed this, and I mean, if we threaten, you know, to cut off trade with China, to put tariffs on, are their products coming to this country? There would be some economic incentive for them to respect human life, but there is no respect for human life in China, is there?
No, the Chinese government brags that through the one-child policy, it has eliminated 400 million people from the Chinese population. And, of course, I say that that eliminating 400 million of the most productive, energetic, enterprising people the world has ever known is probably not a good thing for China. In fact, I think it's probably made China poorer, missing all of those hundreds of millions of people. And yet, population control advocates clap their hands, applaud, and say, it's a good thing you've reduced the population of your country.
And, of course, basically, I think that there's a lot of misconception about, you know, the relationship between poverty and population. But if you have a sufficient population and you can industrialize that and you can use the energies of the people, you can become prosperous. But, of course, instead of that, we're told, oh, no, of course, having children, you know, leads to poverty. And how do you counter an argument like that? It sounds so rational. Look at all these third-world countries, and the women are having so many children, and look how poor they are. Therefore, ergo, women, children, poverty, they all go together. But that really isn't true, necessarily, is it?
Well, no, it's not. And, you know, it all depends on how you look at human beings. If you look at them as consumers, if you look at them as stomachs, if you look at them as mouths, if you look at them as polluters, if you look at them as kind of interlopers on the planet, of course you have a jaundiced view of human beings and you want to reduce their number. But properly seen, human beings are producers, not just consumers. Every stomach comes with two hands attached. Every mouth has a brain behind it. And, you know, people certainly can cause problems in their numbers living together, but using their creative intelligence and the resources, they can clean up the environment of problems that they cause. So it all depends on how you view people, and I view people as the ultimate resource, the one resource you can't do without. And generally speaking, in a free market economy, with the rule of law and with property rights, the more people you have, the more prosperous you are. Now, you look in the third world and you see women with large families. The reason for that is infant and child mortality rates are still very high. If half your children die before adulthood, then you have to have twice as many in order to have two or three survive to adulthood. And, of course, it's vital in these countries to have adult children because they're your only means of support in old age.
Well, you know, basically, of course, we hear these people talking about, oh, soon we're going to have so many people in the world, and soon we're going to have 8 billion people, and then we're going to have 9 billion people. And the inference is that, oh, my goodness, pretty soon we're going to be standing on one another's shoulders. But this really isn't true, isn't it? Basically, isn't fertility falling throughout the world? Aren't in most first world nations, certainly the fertility rate below the level of actually sustaining a population? Could you clarify these issues? Because most people are taken in by the propaganda that has very little basis, in fact. Do you want to discuss that for us, Stephen?
Well, birth rates have fallen over the last few decades farther and faster than anyone imagined possible after World War II. We now have, in Latin America, we have most of the countries are now at or below or at least very close to replacement rate fertility, which means their populations are going to be peaking and then over time level off and even begin to decline. Brazil, for example, the largest Latin American country, over the next couple of years, according to UN estimates, not my estimates, but United Nations estimates, women are going to average only 1.8 children. That's well below the 2 children that they need to sustain the current population. So Mexico is in the same situation. Mexico is now below the number of children, 2 children necessary to sustain the current population. So the large Latin family is a thing of the past. If you look at Asia, well, China, of course, we've talked about the Chinese people only allowed 1 child in the cities, 2 in the countryside for an average across the country of about 1.5 children. Their population is soon going to begin shrinking. Even India now has about 2.3, 2.4 children per couple, but that number is falling rapidly. So we're seeing around the world countries with birth rates that are falling below replacement. In fact, half the countries of the world now have birth rates too low to sustain the current population. The worst cases are countries like Japan and Italy and Spain, where their couples are only averaging a little over one child, which is a recipe for demographic suicide. I mean, if every two people only have one child, you're going to cut the population in half with each generation, and pretty soon, if you go down that road, you're going to have very few people left.
And I think most people don't understand that certainly Europe is dying off. And if it weren't for the Muslim, and the fact that the Muslims are having large families, if you were simply relying upon the other people, indigenous people of France and Germany and Italy, why, and even in Russia, why? I mean, ridiculously low reproduction rates, fertility rates. But the question is, Stephen, why is that happening? We know that the fertility rate's dropping. It's dropping right here in the United States. And we know that, for instance, the male sperm count is dropping all throughout the world. And something seems to be happening as far as the people's ability to reproduce and have children. Do you have any idea why those things might be happening?
Well, I think there are two factors here. In Europe, you have overweening government. You have cradle-to-grave welfare systems. You have the state basically taking over many of the functions of the family, hollowing out the family, reducing the family's economic importance. And that means that young people in Europe don't marry, or if they do marry, they wait several years and then go on to have one child. So basically the socialist state may turn out in the long run, Dr. Stan, to be a kind of collective suicide pact, where everybody turns to the government to provide for the future, and then they themselves forget to provide for the future in the most fundamental way, by providing the future generation. Governments can do a lot of things, a few of them well and many of them poorly, but the governments cannot reproduce. You need families to do that, and families are being destroyed in Europe by large and bureaucratic governments. Low sperm counts, I think that we have hormonal contraceptives to blame for that. We have now growing evidence from around the world that the birth control pill, other hormonal contraceptives, the Depo-Provera, Implanon, Norplant, find their way into the water supply. They're not destroyed in wastewater treatment plants. They survive in the environment. The artificial forms of these hormones survive in the environment for months at a time. The half-life, I think, is something like 81 days, and that means that that this material, these powerful hormones, are in the water that we drink. And I think that accounts for the fact that in Denmark, for example, a male sperm counts have dropped by half over the last 30 years, which means that it's much more difficult for couples to conceive children. And in fact, in the U.S., one out of six couples turns out to be infertile, in part because of this pollution that begins in women's bodies with the birth control pill and then continues on to the environment to affect all of us.
Well, I think it's something we should be very, very concerned about. The other thing is bisphenol, which, of course, is a plastic. It's added to plastics in the baby bottles. And basically, this feminizes men. It releases estrogens and estrogen-like products. It lines all the tin cans. And they don't need to. They've known this going back to the 1930s. So why have they continued using this and feminizing our male? And so many of them have a difficulty with sexual function. And we just can't help but wonder, is this all accidental, or are there really people who would like to decrease the number of people in the world? Well, certainly, are we making any progress? I know you're on the front lines and with the Population Research Institute, you're reaching people throughout the world. Is there growing, not only awareness, but is there growing concern about the implications of, finally, we talk about a world population of 8 or 9 billion, but once it starts to fall, is there any way to stop it from falling, continue falling until literally there are very, very few people left in the world?
Well, our long-term problem is not going to be too many people. It's going to be too few people. And the latest projections from the population division of ECOSOC, the UN Environmental and Social Organization, is that population will peak at close to 8 billion in 2040 and then begin to decline. And at first it declines slowly, as aging of the population proceeds. But then over time that decline will accelerate. And once that train has left the station, it's very hard to put on the brakes. I mean, even in present-day Italy, where now for 20 years they've been averaging about 1.1 children per couple. There are so few young people now coming into their reproductive years that every young couple would have to have four children to stave off population decline.
I'm gonna ask you to hang up and ask my producer to call you back. We've just a little bit of static there. If you wouldn't mind hanging up and Paisley, go ahead.
Sure, I'll be here.
All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're going to disconnect you, and let's hope that our producer will go ahead and call back again.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
into the labor market and paying their Social Security and Medicare taxes so that as older people can get all reap the benefits. And right now there are 58 million Americans receiving Social Security and Medicare. There are another 70 to 73 million baby boomers going to be retiring in the next 20 years. Some of them are already retiring. And then what's going to happen to the system? And so Stephen was just commenting. Go right ahead.
Well, is there anyone in the United States who doesn't understand that there is no Social Security Trust Fund, that there is a bank vault full of IOUs because the Congress has willy-nilly and irresponsibly spent all the money coming in Social Security payments over the last few decades, not saving and investing it, but simply spending it on a spend-as-you-go basis. And now, of course, receipts are less than... Then the amount of money coming in is less than the amount of money going out, and it's going to get worse over time as the baby boomers retire. It's unsustainable. We have too few children in this country to sustain Social Security as it's currently written. The interesting thing is, if we could get our birth rate up from 2 children per family by encouraging young couples to get married and have children to, say, 3 children per family, the Social Security Trust Fund, the Social Security would be solvent for years to come. So the birth rate is critical to maintaining Social Security.
Well, now, one of the things I'd like to check, I'm sure you know these figures better than I do, but my understanding, Chris, we usually say the fertility rate in America is about 2.1 children per family, but how much of that is from the indigenous people, and how much of that is from the immigrants that are coming in, Muslim, and certainly immigrants from Mexico, from South America, or Catholics background, usually having much larger families? I mean, I've heard the figure for indigenous people about 1.6%, 1.7%. Is that accurate, or has anybody actually broken it down to see how much of our continuing 2.1% is coming from immigrants coming into this country and having large families?
Well, we have figures for all the Native American groups, whites, blacks, Native Americans, and Hispanics who were born here. And up until the recent recession, all 4 of those groups were having averaging about 2 to 2.1 children. It's dropped a little bit because of the economic hard times. Young couples are delaying having children until their finances improve. But it's still close to 2 for all of these groups, and as I say, we're better off than all the other developed countries. The new immigrants average 3, you know, not huge families, but larger than the American average. Many of the immigrants from Latin America, of course, have families down in the countries they're from and come here as single men and work. But those who come as intact families average 3 children. Over the course of 1 generation, the next generation drops to the American average of 2. So it's not just new immigrants that are propelling us forward. It's the fact that Americans in general are fairly open to having children, in part because of the strength of religious faith in this country. I mean, 90% of Americans profess a belief in God. Half are in church every Sunday. And, you know, if you read the good book says that children are blessings, and that affects fertility behavior.
And, of course, children are a blessing. And one of the big problems we have, you know, is certainly the people turning against God. And the tragedy is that so many of those people seem to be in key positions in government, and they have certainly a different worldview than the average citizen. And certainly if you believe in God, you believe in the importance of human life. If you don't believe in God, then human life is really relatively unimportant, and we can always have our elected officials just plan our existence, and we go right along with it. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Do you mind taking calls if people would like to call in, Stephen?
No, I'd be happy to.
All right, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Stephen, because certainly Stephen's one of the leaders of this whole effort to really try to counter this whole organized, orchestrated effort to control and reduce the population of the world. Of course, it starts with abortion, and certainly it goes on into euthanasia, and a number of programs which are designed to limit the population of the world. And of course, I've written extensively on that. I believe it's a very real problem. It's not imaginary. And whether it be the hormones that certainly get into our drinking water and find our ways into our diet secondarily, or the bisphenol, or so many other things that we could talk about, the phthalates, these are all chemicals, and we could go down the line. A number of them would have a profound impact on fertility. Well, if you have any questions or comment, why, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, right here at Radio Liberty. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest, of course, is Stephen Moser from the Population Research Institute. In just a moment or two, I will get the telephone number and the contact information out, but I just want to wait to get all the rest of our stations back on board here. But certainly there seems to be a growing awareness, I think, in America, certainly that abortion is basically wrong. In fact, I heard some recent statistics that basically, I think it was somebody was just saying, how do people vote? Well, about 8% of the people are strongly pro-choice, and that will be the major determinant fact in how they vote. But about 22% is strongly pro-life, and that will be a major determinant fact. Now, are those figures accurate, or are there better figures that you would have access to?
No, I think they're accurate, and those numbers have been growing over time of people who vote on the basis of strong pro-life beliefs. Look, this time around, the differential between the pro-life vote and the pro-abortion vote was 14%. That means that a pro-life candidate, when he's running against someone who's pro-choice, automatically gets a 14% advantage in the vote tallies. That's huge. 15 years ago, the differential was about 8%. 20 years ago, it was about 6%. So that differential has been growing over time as America becomes more pro-life. And I think there are two reasons for that. One is that people who are pro-life tend to have larger families. My experience has been that people of pro-life sentiment generally average 3 children because they act on their beliefs. People who are pro-choice, on the other hand, also act on their beliefs. They have abortions, and they tend to average only a little over 1 child. And over time, pro-lifers are more than reproducing themselves, are growing in numbers in the population, and people with pro-choice sentiments are basically aborting themselves out of existence. That's part of it. The other part of it is education. I think that the pro-life movement is doing...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with Stephen Moser. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess Stephen Moser from the Population Research Institute, and we're going to take calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I want to get back to what you were just saying, but before we do, I want you to put out your telephone number and your website so people can get in touch with your organization.
Well, we've got lots of information on the website, which is pop.org, pop.org. POP is short for Population Research Institute, of course. And our telephone number is 540, area code, 622-5240.
Could you repeat that one more time? You always have to repeat the number twice because people never get it the first time.
That's 540-622-5240.
Okay. I never get the telephone number the first time, so I always insist on it being repeated twice. Well, you were just saying that, you know, Sydney, the attitude here in America is shifting. And with all of the propaganda we have in school and certainly the education most kids get in a public school, is abortion is perfectly all right and there is no God. And you know, we all evolved from the slime somewhere, you know, 50 billion years ago, something like that. But you point out that it's been since about 1973 we had Roe versus Wade,
right.
And the abortion came in. But it seems to be that the whole idea of people is shifting very much more into the importance of life. And really, it's amazing that this happens because the media certainly is on the other side. The educational system is on the other side. And yet more and more people, when they really get into discussion of this, are becoming not pro-choice, but pro-life.
Well, because they're the children of people who are pro-life, who chose life. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here. And the other thing, of course, is the advances in technology. I mean, we now have ultrasound, the window on the womb, and that's why one of the great pieces of pro-life legislation that's now being considered and passed by state legislatures allows or mandates that women, before they have an abortion, be shown an ultrasound of their unborn child, because once they see a picture of their little baby, generally they go on to choose life. So ultrasounds make the unborn child real and actually strip away the lies and the deceit of organizations like Planned Parenthood, who say to women, it's nothing more than a clump of cells. It's not a human being.
Oh, I think that's really a wonderful thing, and I think it is exciting for a woman to see what is actually inside of her. And of course, all the propaganda on the other side is nothing there, a group of cells, is so fallacious. And once they understand this is a live human being that's within them, why many of them decide to keep their children. And so I know many of the pro-life groups here in our area have the ultrasound machines, and actually you make it a point to try to get women to actually see what's going on. And I think so when they see that this really is a child, it's a little baby, it's very small, but it is a human being, why they decide to keep the child. And it's unfortunate we have about 40% of the children today are born out of wedlock. But at least they're born, and I think that is the important thing, because every one of those a child is a unique individual, made in the image and likeness of God. I think it's exciting. You've been at this battle for a long time, as have I, and Sydney. I think that we're really making real progress.
I think we are, and you know, our listeners might be interested in knowing that there are no children born out of wedlock in China, because it is illegal to conceive and bear a child if you're not married in China, and so single women are among those who are arrested for the crime of being pregnant and forced to have abortions. So anyone who still believes that China is some kind of socialist paradise where government ownership of the means of production and reproduction is a good thing should consider this, because obviously the right of women to choose life in China is seriously in jeopardy.
The right to choose anything in this totalitarian regime, which we seem to be so intent upon subsidizing and helping to become a dominant force in the world. And I have to wonder about our leaders who will never speak out against the atrocities of the frank murder that's taking place in China. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And we have on the line with us Ruby from Live Oak. And I know Ruby is down at the local abortion clinic on a regular basis, standing there with her sign, just proclaiming life. Hi, Ruby. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I didn't catch the name of your guest.
His name is Stephen Mosher, and I've known Stephen for 20 years or more, and he's been at this for 30 years, and certainly it leads the Population Research Institute. They do a great job. They're probably the premier organization in this country of pushing the right for human life. Go ahead.
I'm certainly going to look into that, because it's the first time I've heard of it, but I just really want to commend Dr. Mosher and yourself for bringing this to light. And for myself, I know a lot of people who are from China, and I can tell you that they know about this program over there, and I don't want to reveal anything, but there's a lot of unhappy women that I know.
Well, I can remember, Stephen, you wrote a book about this woman who was she was Chinese, and she was here in the United States, and she'd come here so she could have another child, and they actually had agents following her over here, didn't they? What was that story about?
Well, they did. This was a woman who was a population control worker in China, so she was in the nasty business of enforcing the one-child policy on women who wanted to have a second child. Then she herself became pregnant with a second child and decided that she wanted to continue the pregnancy, and her superiors laughed at her and said, "You're a population control worker. You know what the rules are. You have to have an abortion." Well, she came to the United States to join her husband, who was here studying for an advanced degree, and the long arm of the People's Republic of China reached out and ordered her to go back to China for an abortion. She applied for and was able to get political asylum. And actually, the story has a happy ending in another regard as well, because after the birth of their child, the entire family became Christians in gratitude, I think, for the many thousands of Christians who reached out and tried to help them to get political asylum. And we did get a small quota of 1,000, an immigration quota of 1,000, for women fleeing forced abortion. Now, that quota is never filled each year. There are just a few dozen or a couple hundred women who apply. But it does my heart good to think that we're rescuing at least a couple hundred of the women who would otherwise be forced to have abortions and subsequently sterilized and have their fertility taken away from them forever.
Yeah, I remember it must be 15, 20 years ago. Yeah, time goes so quickly. But there was a ship, and there were women who had actually come from China. They were all facing forced abortion. I think many of them were actually pregnant, and when they tried to come into the United States, they were arrested and horribly, horribly treated, manacled, and treated like common criminals just because they wanted to come here and have their children. Do you remember that story?
Well, I do. The Golden Venture went aground in New York Harbor.
What happened to that?
It was pretty obvious. But of the passengers, there were only about a dozen women who were fleeing forced abortion who were pregnant. And I believe they should have fallen in a separate category and been treated more humanely, because they were simply trying to rescue the lives of their unborn children. And in fact, it was that episode, along with some others, that led to this very small quota of 1,000 for women fleeing forced abortion. So if that happens again, we'll treat them more humanely.
Well, at least you'll be right on top of it, and that was the Golden Venture. I'd forgotten about it, but I remember so vividly the descriptions of just how horribly these women were treated. I mean, certainly we could have other people coming here for political asylum, but not pregnant women from China. Ruby, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we let you go?
I am just really, really fascinated with this. It's not something that I was aware of. I mean, of course, I was aware of what was going on in China, but I didn't know about this organization. But I did want to say, too, that you mentioned that there are all sorts of things that are helping with the awareness of the right to life, and why we're having more pro-life people being elected. And yeah, the ultrasound has a tremendous amount to do with it, and the women choosing to have their babies because of this is a wonderful thing. But I want to give credit too where credit is due, where there are an awful lot of people, as you say, on the front lines doing the praying and fasting, who really, really believe in this and who have been at this for almost 38 years now. So, I mean, we're not going to stop either.
I know you're not. God bless you, Ruby, and thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
I'll never forget when I was practicing medicine. We had some of the pictures of, you know, a big sheet, probably 3 feet by 4 feet, and it was just pictures of abortions, and we put them out. We didn't display them at all. You had to unwrap them if you wanted to see what was in there. But I mean, some young girls would open that up and see the picture of the aborted fetuses, and they'd become so furious they'd just walk out of the office. And finally, somebody stole all the pictures, you know, because they just can't stand to see the reality of what's going on. In fact, it is fascinating that even today, why none of the major media, to my knowledge, will show actually pictures of aborted fetuses. Have you run into that problem, Stephen?
Well, yes, they're willing to show pictures of atrocities of various kinds around the world, but for some reason, the picture of a baby who died at the hands of an abortionist strikes a particular nerve with these people. These people who belong to the culture of death and who believe that we would be better off if our number were reduced will not allow us to see their handiwork, hiding their evil deeds from the light of day. You know, one thing that's very inspiring to me, being near Washington, D.C., we actually have our office in the beautiful Shenandoah Valley, Virginia, is each year the March for Life, where 100 or 200,000 people gather on the anniversary of Roe v.ersus Wade. And the striking thing for me is we've been going now to these marches for life for decades. The crowd keeps getting younger and younger. And the younger people are increasingly pro-life. And sitting on the fringes, standing on the fringes of this crowd of hundreds of thousands each year, you see this small group of graying women holding National Organization of Women signs, pro-abortion signs. Their numbers get smaller, and their ranks get thinner and older each year, as ours get younger and more robust. So I think we're winning the battle. We're winning the battle in the streets. We're winning the hearts and minds of the American people, and it is only a matter of time before we overturn this law.
Well, I certainly wish that the Bush administration, when they had both the House and the Senate, and all they had to do was have a simple majority vote to overturn Roe v.ersus Wade and put a rider on there saying, you know, that the Supreme Court cannot adjudicate this issue; they are barred from it according to the Constitution, and that would have put an end to it. But unfortunately, there was no strong leadership there at that time. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But yeah, I think it really is very, very true. I know I've heard Congressman Ron Paul talking about going out to college campuses, and although Ron is certainly a pro-life, why he doesn't stress that, he talked primarily about ideas of freedom and finance. But he said how many young people, you know, are solidly, you know, clinging to these ideas of individual freedom. Well, individual freedom does not mean necessarily the right to kill an unborn child. And I think that many of the young people today are simply repudiating the views of the past. Well, let's go to Barbara. And I think Barbara's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Barbara. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. Thank you for having Stephen on. I was wondering about in China, with the one-child policy, are we seeing an imbalance of male versus female over there at all? Do people choose to keep their first child if it's a female? As apparently the males were the ones that were taking care of the parents as they became older, or is that changing somewhat?
No, there's a huge imbalance in the sexes in China today. There are now in China about 100 million more men than women, and there are tens of millions of young men who are reaching marriageable age or will reach marriageable age in the years to come who will not be able to find brides and get married because the women they would have married were killed in utero by sex-selective abortion or left to die after birth through female infanticide, simple abandonment. This is a tragedy of enormous dimensions, not just for the little girls who die, but for the men who will be deprived the ability to marry and have children themselves. It's tremendously destabilizing, I think, for China to have all this what we might call excess testosterone running around the country. And I think that we're seeing all kinds of social problems, societal problems arise as a result. We have a huge increase in gang activity in China, criminal activity. We have a huge outflow of young men beyond China's borders going to Southeast Asia, Central Asia, up to the Russian Far East and Siberia, in part to seek business opportunities, in part to seek brides. I'm afraid that those will be flashpoints for future conflicts, border conflicts between China and its near neighbors, this large population of young Chinese men. And then, of course, there's the problem of the military. which is having no trouble recruiting millions to its ranks because there are millions of single young men who are looking to military life as a kind of alternative family. So I think that they have not done themselves any favors by the one-child policy in an economic sense, but their society is going to face serious social problems because of the tens of millions of single men running around.
And, you know, I was just thinking, you know, God really has a plan, and he created a pretty much equal numbers of men and women because they're supposed to marry and reproduce. And here the Chinese communist leaders think that they can outsmart the system, you know, and certainly doing what's expedient. They've got too many people. And so rather than try to figure out what they can do and how they could get people voluntarily to limit population, why, of course, that they come in. And, of course, it ends up with the genocide of girls, little girl babies, and killing them and aborting them. And then, of course, you get all more problems, you know. Between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. Barbara, do you have a question or comment before we let you go?
No, I think I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much. As I say again, thank you for having Stephen on. It's been a pleasure.
All right, fine. And for those who don't know, that was my wife calling, and she's a great supporter of yours, Stephen. She appreciates everything that you do.
And, you know, there's one thing more that we can say about female infanticide. The government of China has not taken serious steps to stop female infanticide or sex-selective abortion. They've banned the use of ultrasounds, but they haven't actually done what a one-party dictatorship can do to stop this practice, in part because the fewer women you have, the lower the birth rate. Only women have children, obviously, as everyone knows. And so the selective elimination of women out of the population not only controls population growth now, but it controls it in the next generation as well.
But there are going to be serious complications one way or another for...
Absolutely.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Stephen, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. What are the thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners this evening?
Well, I'd like to emphasize that...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.
Institute, commenting that they have a number of YouTube, 3 or 4 minute cartoons, just talking about the absurdity of so much of what we're being told about overpopulation, how we're going to be standing on one another's shoulders, and they're simply lying to us, ladies and gentlemen, because certainly by the time the population gets to 8 or 9 billion, it's going to be falling and falling dramatically. Certainly Europe is not reproducing itself. Mexico is down just a bit at the level of reproduction, as is South America. Of course, it is my firm belief that a lot of this is engineered. They're engineering the population. They're doing it here. And if you haven't read my material on the population control research, pardon me, on population control agenda, why you can go up on the Internet and pull down, go to your search engine, population control agenda. Population control agenda. You need to get my talk. It's on DVD. Planned population reduction. Or, none dare, call it genocide. We have several 4-tape sets on this. But Sydney, if you get any of these, you can just ask for a copy of the population control agenda, and we'll be glad to send you a free copy or pull it down on the Internet. Type in my name, population control agenda. You'll get it. It's probably the best single thing that gives you the overview, but it's going to have to be updated. There's so much now coming out that we're learning about how they are actually poisoning people, and they know what they're doing. This is the thing. The bisphenol, which is in all tin cans today, of course, releases estrogens, and this is why so many of our boys are feminized. And then, of course, the bisphenol in plastic baby bottles, and they warm them up with the milk in them, and that, of course, releases the bisphenol, and then these boys get a large dose of estrogen. They know what they're doing, and this is one reason for the low sperm count. They have an organized, a coordinated effort, and whether it be fluoride, whether it be mercury, these all have a toxic effect on reproduction. They know what they're doing. If you haven't heard the talk, and it's available on DVD by our good friend Dr. David Ayoub, it's called Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Vaccine Agenda. Let me suggest this, because if you get the DVD, you get a free CD-ROM with several thousand pages of scientific studies on the knowledge that mercury is toxic. Not only produces mental problems, but it attacks fertility. And it changes the genetic structure by epigenetics, so that not only is the child going to be less productive, fertile, but their children and their children's children. And by the time you get several generations down the line, of course, they won't be having any children at all. The same thing with genetically modified food. They know what they're doing, ladies and gentlemen. And these are the people that we're talking about, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, Monsanto, that creates these frankenfoods, have set up the Doomsday Seed Bank, up above the Arctic Circle, where frozen in the tundra and the permafrost are the seeds that they will bring back when they start in all over again. These people know exactly what they're doing. It seems so incredible. Nobody could be that crass or indifferent to human suffering. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they could. They intend to kill off most of the people in the world. If you've never seen the Georgia Guidestones, you can go to my website, RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com, look at the picture of the Georgia Guidestones. Read the instructions on there, the Ten Commandments that come from the very gate of hell. This was put up by the Rosicrucians, a secret society. And, of course, there are all sorts of secret societies out there. That, of course, pay allegiance to a different God. And when you understand that there is a conspiracy against humanity, against humankind, then so much of what's going on really begins to make sense. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. We ask you to pray for America. Pray for Stephen Mosier and the Population Research Institute. They do a great job. We ask you to pray for our leaders, our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision, and our protection. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend Chris Pinto, who put out the Secret Mystery, a DVD series. There's three of them that we carry, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, and The Eye of the Phoenix. It's the story of the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, and these are occult emblems. Well, of course, Chris has been working on another project, going into the background of, is America a Christian nation? And, of course, there many people will tell you that America was formed, there were only Christians here. Certainly all the founding fathers were Christians of one form or another. And that's why we're a Christian nation. And then, of course, there's other people who say no. There was no Christian influence here. Why, there was predominantly the people who formed America were Masons. They were actually, many of them were deeply involved in the occult and the mystery religions. And America was formed as to pursue the goal of the ancient mystery religions to bring about a one world government. Well, Chris was kind enough to allow me in the first of the series to point out the fact that both are wrong and both are right. There was a strong Christian influence here in America, but all of our founding fathers were not Christians. Some of them were deeply involved in the occult, and some of them did want to create this new nation here. So that one day this would lead the whole world to a one-world government, would destroy the Christian faith and install this one-world leader. This has been the goal of the ancient mystery religions and the secret societies going back to the time of Nimrod 4,200 years ago. So basically, which position is correct? Well, I think they're both correct, but of course we have to know objectively, already certainly, that some of our founding fathers, we may not want to admit it, but they were not evangelical Christians. There's no way you can make Thomas Paine into a Christian, or Benjamin Franklin, or Thomas Jefferson. Although Thomas Jefferson respected the Christian teachings, he did not believe in the divinity of Christ. And certainly there's a question as to where Adams came from and where George Washington came from. But remember, there were probably about 60 to 80 founding fathers. Most of them were solidly Christian. But there have always been, here in the United States, this occult influence aimed at bringing about this one-world government, and that's what behind everything going on today. And you can't understand the movement towards globalism. You can't understand why we're doing everything we can to build up the economy of China and destroy the economy of the United States unless you understand the background of the things that Chris has done, put forward in his series. So, Chris Pinto, thank you so very much for being with us.
Hey, Dr. Stan, thank you for having me back on the show.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and incidentally, Chris is putting together a DVD on the Georgia Guidestone, something I always wanted to do, and I'd never get around to it, but he is going to, I hope, when do you think you'll have that ready for on the Georgia Guidestone?
Well, the Georgia Guidestones, it's called Dark Clouds Over Elberton, and we're hoping to have it hopefully by the middle of next year.
I think it's so vitally important because here's a way, of course, demonstrating to people there really is an occult movement. There really are secret societies. They put up a monument here in Elberton that calls for population reduction, dramatic population reduction. But that's for a different night, a different subject. Right now, let's get on to the subject we're talking about. Is America a Christian nation? Of course, I think the major thing is, how do you define a Christian nation? And we never define what we're talking about, so you pick up the story there.
Well, I think, you know, and I make this point in a new film, The Hidden Face of the Founding Fathers.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Go right ahead, Chris.
Well, I think, you know, the distinction that I make in the new film is that I believe America certainly was a Christian country, if you will, from the time of the Puritan pilgrims around 1620 or so, when the Mayflower came over, and then you've got the early English settlers that are setting, you know, that are building towns and cities and schools and universities. It's very clear that those people were Christians, that they believe the Bible is the Word of God, and they believe the Gospel. I think that's provable beyond any doubt from their writings, and then by examining, you know, the institutions that they set up. I always like to point to Harvard University, because Harvard's motto back in 1636 was "Truth for Christ and the Church." You know, the Harvard Declaration said that every student must earnestly consider that the main end of his life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life.
Now remember, that was just 16 years after the pilgrims arrived in the United States, so we're not talking about that long, and they were already putting up this major university to teach people about the Word of God so they could preach the Word of God. It was to train ministers. That's what Harvard was about initially, but boy, he's certainly gone a long way from there by now, but go ahead.
So that, you know, I like to point to things like that to show that, yeah, the original focus of the English settlers was to establish a Christian society, if you will. I don't really think that those people were thinking in terms of nation building. I don't think they were really envisioning something like the United States. But I think as they were building their, you know, their towns and their cities and their, you know, their individual institutions, they were certainly dedicating them to the Lord Jesus Christ. But you've got 150 years or so from the time of the pilgrims in 1620 to the American Revolution in 1776. And a lot of things changed in the country during that time. And I think, you know, in our modern histories, we often overlook that. We forget that there's this gap between the earliest Christian settlers and then the revolutionaries. And the revolutionaries were really a whole different breed, and they had been conditioned by the Enlightenment thinking that was going on over in Europe, that was going on over in France and England. And that's evident when you see their influences. You see their
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Chris Pinto right here at Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan, and Chris is just saying that the people who founded America were staunch Christians, and certainly you can see the Christian influence there, but certainly Harvard was created in 1636, I mean, they were talking 16 years after the Pilgrims arrived. They were already building Harvard University. They were building William and Mary University. And all these universities were being built here in the United States. And, of course, it wasn't very long, though, before Harvard was taken over by the dark spiritual forces because the evil and wicked people were here. So then the Christians built Yale to teach people to be, you know, to preach the gospel. And then the evil people took over Yale, so they got Princeton there, and, well, of course, it wasn't long before they took over Princeton. So there's always been this group of evil people who wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of this nation. Would that be a fair appraisal, Chris?
Oh, I think it's undeniable. I think you can trace it in the world. If we trace it in the Western world, we find it going on continually in Europe and England in particular. That's a lot of what we talk about in our Secret Mystery series with Francis Bacon and Dr. John Dee and these characters, that what they were doing was very subversive to the gospel.
And just exactly as we have the same subversive element working within our Supreme Court, or we had it when they certainly took God in prayer and the Ten Commandments and the Bible out of our schools, they knew what they were doing. These were Masons. These were people whose loyalty was to the great architect of the universe. They wanted to destroy any semblance of Christianity in this country, and that's why they took God in prayer, the Bible, and the Ten Commandments out of the schools. It had nothing to do with a wall of separation between church and state. There were a group of people who wanted to transform America, and they've done a pretty good job. Well, they haven't done as good a job as they want, because there's still an awful lot of good people who love the Lord here in America, despite all of their efforts to destroy the Christian faith of our people. Go right ahead, Chris.
Well, what's interesting, you know, on this note, Dr. Stan, what's really interesting, and the thing that I try to uncover in this new film, is that this struggle, see, part of the reason I made the film is because what we're being told through guys like Glenn Beck and David Barton is that if we can just get back to the founding fathers of the revolution, then everything will be okay. And if we study that time, and if you study what they believed and what they were doing, I believe that the founders were really the beginning of the problem.
Well, but of course, that was not all of the founders. I mean, many of the founding fathers were devout Christians, but there's certainly five that you name specifically in your film, which who were not obviously evangelical Christians, and some of them were violently anti-Christian people like Thomas Paine. So certainly these people who, of course, they are given tremendous play today because they certainly, certainly have had a good press. I mean, the people who are part of these secret societies have actually rewritten history, and of course, you write history. Why? But these people played an important part. Nobody can question that. Certainly, Benjamin Franklin, who was not a Christian, deeply involved in the occult, who played an important part in the Constitution, as did certainly. The others that you mentioned, but go right ahead. And I think one of the big questions is George Washington, certainly the father of our country. And most people have never even seen the picture there, which is the dome of the Capitol, of the apotheosis of George Washington. And perhaps you want to talk a little bit about the significance of that. Go right ahead.
Well, the apotheosis of Washington is the, that word apotheosis is an ancient pagan term. And it was used to describe men who had done great deeds in their lifetime, who then, it was believed, ascended into godhood. And that's what's being depicted there inside the U.S. Capitol, because you've got George Washington floating up in the clouds, and there are all of these, you know, pagan gods and goddesses floating around him. And it really shows the deification of Washington, which if you read all the things that have been said about George Washington, people exalt George Washington like a god. I mean, they really do. And I think this can almost be said in certain Christian circles as well. There are people who defend Washington rabidly as though he were a Bible-believing Christian. The problem is that, when Washington in his own lifetime was compelled to to make a confession of faith publicly before he left office, he refused to do so. He refused to publicly confess that he was a Christian. And in his letters, he openly wrote about God as the great architect of the universe. That was, you know, how he described God. It was the God of masonry, you know, the universalistic God. And Washington, in his own writing, said that his purpose in fighting the American Revolution and establishing the United States was not to establish a Christian nation, but to establish a nation where Christians and Jews and Muslims and any other religion, he said, any other religion could have an equal place in America. That was what he was, according to him, that's what he was fighting for. And those are according to Washington's own writings. In fact, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about the Treaty of Tripoli, because the Treaty of Tripoli in Article 11 says specifically that the government of the United States is in no way founded upon the Christian religion. And this has been a real point of controversy for a number of years, and guys like David Barton have argued that the reason the Treaty of Tripoli was written that way was to appease Muslims who were in a conflict with the United States, and they were trying to reassure them that this was not some sort of crusade. Now, if you study the Treaty of Tripoli, this is what's very disturbing. The treaty is written originally in Arabic, and then it was drafted in English here in the United States. The Arabic version of the treaty, apparently, does not have Article 11 in it. Okay? What that means is that the treaty given to the Muslims didn't say that the government of the United States is not based on the Christian religion. But when it was brought to the United States and it was entered into the Senate, before it was ratified, Article 11 was added to it. And according to Moncure D. Conway, 19th century historian, the person who added Article 11 was George Washington. It was George Washington who apparently wrote out that the government of the United States is in no sense founded upon the Christian religion, and he sent that to the Senate, according to Conway, and then it was unanimously approved on the floor of the Senate.
I think that, of course, anything that Washington had put forward would have been unanimously approved because, of course, he was really the father of the country. Everybody looked to him for leadership. But unfortunately, I think he was a fallible man, and he certainly was not an evangelical Christian, contrary to what people would like us to believe today. I mean, he may have very well been evangelical when he was very young, but the whole idea at this time, you know, certainly the ideas were coming down of the Enlightenment, and there was this belief that man could create this wonderful utopian society. People really need to read Dan Brown's book, his latest book. The name escapes me, but he goes into a great deal of a lot of these things. Of course, Dan Brown, of course, is deeply involved in the occult, and he actually has the whole message of the occult in that book, where he tells you the hero of the book is finally gets the secret that has been suppressed for so long, and that is, you are God. That if once you recognize the fact that you are God, then, of course, that you have divine properties, that, of course, the world opens up to you. Well, that was the message, of course, of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. And yet there really are millions of people in America today who have accepted this bad philosophy, this occult philosophy. And yet, apparently, George Washington, although he may very well was a deist, why he did not believe in the deity of Jesus Christ. Would that be a fair statement?
I believe that would be a fair statement. And the reason I say it that way is because there's nothing in Washington's letters that I know of where he came right out and said that. But according to the testimonies of the clergy who knew him, that was their belief about Washington. in particular Dr. Ashbel Green, who was the congressional chaplain for 8 years during Washington's presidency in Philadelphia. Dr. Green said, and there is quoted historically as saying that he knew from his many conversations with Washington that while he respected Christianity, he simply did not believe in the Christian revelation.
But don't you think at that time the vast majority of the people in this country were Christians?
I do. And I think what's really interesting, Dr. Stan, you know, I came across something, or a friend of mine sent me a link to a an event that happened in 1863 during the Civil War era. You see, people were there. There were a lot of people who were angry at what the Founding Fathers did during the Revolution in terms of the Constitution, because they specifically voted to keep God out of the Constitution. Many Christians don't realize that, but they put it to a vote. You know, should we mention God in the Constitution? And they said no. They voted against the idea of doing it. And there have been Christians from that time to, you know, right up to this day, who have been upset about that fact. And there have been movements to try and change that.
But of course they did. Of course, when they had the date, it was the day of our Lord. Certainly that you say, well, that was just tradition. But certainly the people of the French Revolution, in their documents, they didn't say the day of our Lord. In fact, they started with a new date simply at that time. So there was strong Christian influence, but go right ahead.
Well, what?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, And with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
You kept it that the there were 56 some people who signed the Constitution of 55, and by 55 for the Constitution, 56 for the Declaration of Independence, and I think the majority of them were Christians. It was simply that some of the key figures, like Jefferson, certainly Thomas Paine, Benjamin Franklin, George Washington, and John Adams, were not Christians. Now, what about Adams? Certainly, as Adams grew older, did he ever profess Christianity? I have a letter he actually wrote to Thomas Jefferson, hoping that he was going to become a Calvinist before he died. And of course, Thomas Jefferson writes back and says he will live forever, he will be immortal, because he would never become a Calvinist. And of course, so there were a lot of Calvinists here at that time. And Sidney, but what do you think about John Adams and his personal beliefs as far as Christianity are concerned?
Well, if you read the letters between Adams and Jefferson, I mean, a lot of information comes out. First of all, Jefferson said that he thought Calvinism was demonology, okay, and that Calvin worshipped a demon specifically. It's this kind of thing that people don't realize about the founders. They didn't just reject Christianity. They totally denounced it.
Well, now wait a minute. Would you say founders? You're talking about specifically Jefferson.
Jefferson, that
certainly is not all the founding fathers.
Right.
There were probably
right.
How many founding fathers were there? I mean, basically, I've seen lists that there were probably 60 to 80 of them. So and the majority of those were Christians, but you're speaking of these five, aren't you, specifically?
Right. Now I'm speaking in the film. I mean, the men that I believe are really the chief oracles for American revolutionary philosophy. And I mentioned specifically Jefferson, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Paine, and George Washington, those being the guys that I examine in the film. But to get back to John Adams, a lot of people have the impression that Adams was a Christian. But I think if anybody read his letters, it would make your hair stand on end. John Adams was, in my opinion, he was a pagan intellectual. He would make reference to Christianity, but Adams was a Unitarian. And that meant that he denied the idea of a Trinity or a triune God, God the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He did not believe the Holy Spirit even existed. He thought there was no such thing as the Holy Spirit, that was just a fabrication that had been invented by pagans or something. He also did not believe that Jesus was the Son of God. Adams was Unitarianism was somewhat influenced by Eastern mysticism, and Adams certainly was. He makes reference in his writings to Jefferson about an ancient Indian book called the Shasta. That's the first book of Brahmin theology. In that book, it says, you know, God is an essence that nobody knows anything about, and, you know, don't seek to know who God is because your search will be in vain. And that's what Adams believed about God. Adams did not believe it was possible to know who God is. And so there's a quote from him where he's talking about the idea of Jesus as the Son of God. And he's denouncing Christians, and he says they all believe that great principle, God, who created this boundless universe, came down to this little ball, the earth, to be spit upon by Jews. And he says, and until this awful blasphemy is got rid of, there never will be any liberal science in the world.
Of course, these people were all rationalists at the time. They were victims of the Enlightenment. Or this idea that man was going to be able to create a better society, that they were wanted to repudiate the monarchies of Europe, and they certainly wanted to repudiate the excesses of the Catholic Church, which validated the monarchies, and the monarchies validated the Church. And there was so much corruption there, and people were looking to build a different and a better society without certainly a ruling aristocracy, without a religion, of course, that was dominating people's lives, because Catholicism was certainly, at that time, although it had the form of Christianity, it was really a hierarchy, power structure. But of course, so often happens within Christianity. I believe it's been infiltrated. Anyway, we'll be back here in just a few moments with Chris Pinto, who has done a DVD on the faith of the Founding Fathers. But it is simply five of the Founding Fathers. It's not the vast majority of the people who were there at the Constitutional Convention. Would you agree with it wasn't the vast majority of the people at the Constitutional Convention, Chris?
Yes. Certainly, there's only five that I mentioned.
And, of course, the vast majority of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence. The vast majority of the people were Christians, but we'll be back in just a moment here.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess it's Chris Pinto. We're talking about the fourth in the DVD series, and the Faith of the Founders. And I just one of my favorite books is a book written, it's The Master Thoughts of Thomas Jefferson. And this is what he said about Christianity. The laws of nature have withheld from us the means of physical knowledge of the country of spirits. And revelation has, for reasons unknown to us, chosen to leave us in the dark as we were. When I was young, I was fond of the speculation which seemed to promise some insight into that hidden country. But observing at length that they left me in the same ignorance as which they found me, I have for many years ceased to read or to think concerning them, and have reposed my head upon the pillow of ignorance which a benevolent Creator has made so soft for us, knowing how much we should have used for it. And basically he's saying, you know, when he was young, he was really looking into the background of spiritualism and of these occult ideas. As he grew older, he realized, of course, he really couldn't figure them out, and he was just sort of going to put his head on the soft pillow of the Creator, and he believed in a God, but he did not believe in the divinity of Jesus Christ because he was too much of an intellectual to accept that there could be such a thing as the supernatural. In other words, that God, Jesus Christ, could have committed or could have performed all the miracles. And as he wanted to rely upon his reason, he was a brilliant individual, but he was so brilliant he could not accept the fact that there was a God who was directing the course of his life and the life of others. But anyway, of course, I think that he was a fascinating individual, tragic individual, a brilliant individual. He was so brilliant he could not accept the simple story of the scriptures, which I think, of course, is the key to understanding all of a life, and he could never surrender his will to that of the Creator who created both the heaven and the earth. Well, our guest, of course, is Chris Pinto. And Chris has done a great DVD on the faith of the founders, and certainly goes into Thomas Jefferson, goes into Thomas Paine, goes into Benjamin Franklin, but of course really somewhat iconoclastic in his dealing with both George Washington and John Adams. And yet Chris has done the research on it. He's read the individual letters and things that I haven't had a chance to. I haven't read all of the letters between Adams and Jefferson, but Chris claims that Adams certainly was in no way an evangelical Christian. We know that Jefferson was not. Chris, before we go on, why don't you get your website out there so people would know how to get in touch with you?
Sure. Our website is our film company, Adullam Films, and it's Adullam Films, FILMS.com. If you go to adullamfilms.com, or if you can't remember that, filmforjesus.com. And ours is a Christian film company. We've got a number of documentaries there that we've produced, mainly dealing with Bible prophecy. And this is, like Dr. Stan said, the fourth in our Secret Mystery series. Adullamfilms.com, or you can call our toll-free number at 888-780-5049. That's 888-780-5049 if you wanted to call us by phone.
And here, Sydney, Chris starts out talking about Thomas Paine. Now, Thomas Paine was certainly one of the inspirations for the American Revolution. And certainly his common sense essays, I mean, some of the things he wrote were magnificent. But, of course, Thomas Paine was a revolutionary, and as soon as the American Revolution War was over, he went over to France to try to get the revolution going on there, and he was violently anti-Christian. In fact, he was so anti-Christian that when he came back to the United States after barely escaping with his life, they were going to guillotine him, you know, in this very revolution he had created. And of course, nobody would have anything to do with him because he had written a book called The Age of Reason, and it basically is a denunciation of Christianity. I know my minister, Roy Kraft, who taught me so much of what I know about the faith, that said that, you know, whenever his blood pressure got down and he wanted to get it up, he'd pick up a copy of Thomas Paine's The Age of Reason and read it, and then he'd get his blood pressure back up again. And, of course, certainly... Thomas Paine actually was repudiated by most of the founding of this country because, of course, having written that book and his damnation of Christianity. The only person who really had much to do with him was Thomas Jefferson, who, because he himself was not a Christian, could sympathize with Paine. But the vast majority of the people, I'm sure you know what happened at that time, most of the people in this country would have nothing to do with Thomas Paine because of his writings. Is that true?
Well, most of the citizens were. I would like to say two things on that. If you read what the founders said about Paine, like John Adams, Adams says, "Let the blackguard Paine say we will," and this kind of thing. Paine was going to the extreme of calling for the abolishment of religion entirely. Okay, to just do away with religion. And that's why he said things like, "I don't believe in the creed of any church." He says, "My own mind is my own church," and so on. None of the founders, however, confronted Paine for his denunciation of the gospel. In other words, denying that Jesus is the Son of God, or that the the miracle like the virgin birth of Christ and things like this. Because Paine, of course, said all of that was just a fairy tale. It was a fable. And none of them ever confronted him on those issues because they all generally agreed.
Well, now, wait a minute. You're only speaking of these five people, though. You're not speaking of the founders, because certainly the founding fathers, as I said, 60 to 80 of them. So isn't it rather unfair to say the none of the founders opposed him, none of the five that you've mentioned, but we
Dr. Stan, I'm focusing on the five. Here's the thing. As far as the signers of the Declaration of Independence, I would challenge people to really go into the writings of those men. I mean, if you believe those guys were Christians, actually go read their letters, read what they said, because a lot of them are presented as though they were Christians. Like Governor Morris, he's a classic example. People will quote him to suggest he was a Christian. But Thomas Jefferson says in his letters that Governor Morris had no belief in Christianity. So things like this are overlooked. George Mason's another example. There's a statue of George Mason in Washington, D.C. And he's leaning there on near a pair of books. And what are the books? One of them is written by John Locke. The other one is written by Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Rousseau was a rabid enemy of Christianity.
But actually, Locke was not an enemy of Christianity, was he?
I'm not as familiar with Locke, familiar with Rousseau.
Well, Sidney, Locke was a Christian. Rousseau certainly was not a Christian.
Yeah, Rousseau and Voltaire both believed that Christianity was bad for government and that Christianity should be done away with. You find that pattern among many of the founders because they were influenced by Voltaire and Rousseau and the Enlightenment thinkers. And when you read Paine's writing, what Paine is doing is he's definitely an extremist, but he's like spilling the beans.
Well, because Paine is deeply involved in the occult, and basically, of course, you go to the Georgia Guidestones, I know you've been there, and they're dedicated to Thomas Paine. So there's this continuity of the occult, the very foundation of America, on one side, and of course then the Christian influence on the other. But go right ahead.
Well, admittedly, I myself have not gone through all the writings of all the signers of the Declaration of Independence, so it wouldn't be fair for me to comment on all of them. I will say that if we look at the testimonies of the clergy, the Christian clergymen at that time, there are at least two of them who openly state that they believe the revolutionaries in general, both military and civil, were infidels, not Christians. And I'm really talking about the revolutionary founders. And then you've got Bird Wilson, who preached the sermon that was very highly publicized during that time, saying that the people who were running the United States government, the early government, none of them were Christians. The idea that, 85 of them or something were Christians and that there was just a handful that were not, the collective evidence that And certainly, if there were those 85 Christians or however many, their views, their biblical views, were not the prevailing philosophy of the revolutionaries who were setting forth the ideas of the United States government. Because, I mean, think about it. When the Treaty of Tripoli is signed on the floor of the Senate, it was unanimously agreed upon. Nobody objected.
Well, but the difference, though, between saying we're a Christian nation or was founded on Christian principles with predominantly Christians here, there's a, and it's really what we mean, the definition of a Christian nation. I think that I think the vast majority of the people were Christians. I think that the vast majority of the people believed in the divinity of Jesus Christ. There was certainly a small occult group that did not, and they were, of course, manipulating one another into positions of power. Just that they do the same thing today in Washington, D.C.
And there I agree, Dr. Stan. I think a majority of the citizenry was Christian. And like you said about Thomas Paine, after The Age of Reason was published, Paine, he went and he moved back here to America when he came back from France. And according to his biographer, Moncure D. Conway, Paine had a continual parade of visitors who were constantly coming over to his house, people that he knew, people that he didn't know, strangers, an old woman came by, and they all told him that if he did not repent of his unbelief in Christ and believe the gospel, that he was going to die and go to hell. And these people were very bold, and they continually told him. I mean, there was an old woman who came over, knocked on his door one day, walked in. He said, "What do you want?" She says, "I've been sent by God to tell you if you don't believe Christ, you'll be damned." And he says, "Oh, get out of here. I don't believe what you're saying," wherever. And he ends up throwing her out. Paine was so relentlessly anti-Christ that he wanted eyewitnesses with him in the room during the final months of his life when he knew that he was declining and getting ready to die, because he was fearful that if one of these Christians would come to his house and visit him, and they would spend 10 or 15 minutes with him and then go out and tell everybody that he had recanted and had suddenly now believed Christianity and so on. So Paine wanted to make sure that he had eyewitnesses with him who could testify that he rejected Christianity with his dying breath.
But he hated Christianity, but he was repudiated by the vast majority of the people. None of the major people in America would have anything to do with him, except for Thomas Jefferson. And Jefferson was sorely criticized for having allowed Paine to come to the White House to visit him. I'm sure you're well aware of that.
Right, but Paine's philosophies, his ideas set forth.
But there's no question. He was deeply involved in the occult, and as we commented, that Georgia Guidestones is dedicated to Paine. Paine was deeply involved in the occult. But that doesn't mean that certainly the majority of the people repudiated Paine after he came back, didn't they?
Well, what they were repudiating was him wanting to do away with religion.
Absolutely. They repudiated it because they were Christians, and they felt that he had done a disservice to the very cause, of Christianity.
I would encourage anybody to actually go read those repudiations. None of them are repudiating his denunciation of the gospel. See, I would put it, the way that I understand this, Dr. Stan, is you have the gospel, which says that Jesus is the Son of God, and by faith on him, men come to salvation. Then you have the idea of Christianity, which is a framework of morality and conduct where people go to church on Sunday and they practice so-called Christian behavior, being a good Samaritan and this kind of thing. But they don't necessarily believe the gospel. They have what the Apostle Paul called a form of godliness that denies the power thereof. And John Adams is the classic example. Adams would says things that sound like he's defending Christianity, but he denies the gospel in his writings.
But you see the same thing today, Chris. You see an awful lot of people who consider themselves Christian, but of course they have not given themselves to our Lord, and they've never had a born-again experience. And you and I would not consider themselves Christians, but they consider themselves Christians.
Right. And that's the case. I mean, you have the classic quote from John Adams where he says he's denouncing biblical Christianity, and he says, "Ye will say, I am no Christian, but I say you are no Christian." Because these guys, the danger of what Adams and others were doing with Christianity, it's the same danger we're facing today, is they wanted to redefine Christianity. They really wanted a form of Christianity without faith in Jesus as the Messiah.
No question at all. And of course, the same forces are at work today that were at work at the time of the American Revolution. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And there's been this struggle between, of course, the occult, the strong occult, and, of course, it had infiltrated the Christian church at that time, that we're talking about in 1776, and today. But in those days, of course, they had to conceal really the occult nature of what they were doing and pretend to be, of course, Christians. Whereas today, why, of course, these people are in predominance. They control the government, and they don't even pretend to be evangelical Christians. Oh, well, George Bush pretended to be, but every other word was a cuss word, and not when he was in the public, but he had the most vile mouth. The people who were with him have talked about George W. Bush and his persistent swearing. And, of course, but this is not unusual. The same thing was true of Richard Nixon and so many the people who have become, they're built up, they go to the prayer breakfast and they give this wonderful, wonderful prayer, and pretend to be Christians. I know Richard Nixon did that. And then they go back to the White House, and you can actually listen to the White House tapes and hear the real Richard Nixon. And there was the real George W. Bush. But certainly there are powerful occult forces today in America, but don't you think there are powerful Christian principles here? Unfortunately, it is the occult that hold the positions of power today. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I said to a friend of mine recently debating this issue that I believe as Christians we have to confront the tares, but we also have to remember to thank God for the wheat. And I don't want anybody to get the impression that I'm not thankful for the wheat for our fellow believers who have been part of this country from the beginning and continue right up to this day. Guys like you, Dr. Spann.
Well, I think the major thing is to realize that there's always been the two forces in America. One was the occult. One was, of course, the Christian. But certainly the occultists were instrumental because they wanted to create this country so they could bring the world into a one-world government, which is coming about soon. Chris, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I part of the reason why.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
Rulers. What we need, of course, I believe, is individuals to have a personal relationship with God and to rule themselves and to limit the power of government. And then the people in government itself, I personally believe, should be people who fear God and will follow his rules and regulations and restrict the power of government so men could be free. I think that would be the ideal society. Would you agree with that?
Well, I have to confess, I am still mentally working my way through how you could have a Christian government in this present world. I'm continually reminded that Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world."
No, but we've got to live here, and we want to have the best government we can. Well, we cannot have a Christian government, but we could have a government made up of Christians. That would be the difference. Hey, we're out of time. We'll have to continue this some other time, Chris. It's always a pleasure, and I'm really looking forward to, Chris, your coming out video entitled "The Georgia Guidestones." I think that this will hopefully be a real eye-opener for many people.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Stan. I appreciate you having me on the show.
God bless. Good night. And our guest has been Chris Pinto, certainly one of our good friends, always does a great job. And I think his information, certainly we need to evaluate all of this as we search for the truth. Was America formed as a Christian nation? No, it was formed predominantly by Christians, but there was a strong occult influence at the very top of the revolutionary movement, no question at all. And certainly many of the people that we attribute the founding of America to were actually anti-Christian, unfortunately. And yet, of course, we still inherited the greatest nation that there's ever been. Imperfect because man is imperfect, but certainly the Constitution, had it been adhered to, limiting the power of government would have given us maximum freedom. Well, certainly this is the time when I need to remind our leaders that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is predominantly listener-supported. And if you're out there listening to us across America, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters so we keep doing what we're doing. We do carry the first three parts of the Secret Mystery series. We'll probably not be carrying the fourth part. Chris is a good friend, but we would disagree on certain aspects of it, though there's a great deal of truth in the fourth one, but we're going to be carrying the first three parts, and that is the Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, the riddles in stone, the secret architecture of our nation's capital, because, believe me, the occult influences were here. You look at those great buildings in Washington, you see the replicas of what had happened in ancient Greece and ancient Rome. And the pillars, the architecture, is Greco-Roman. Why? Because the people who founded this country wanted to replicate the world empires of both Greece and Rome. And what you must understand is these people wanted America to rule the world and establish this world government. And that is never what we should have done. We should have actually kept to our own. We did not need the rest of the world, and we could help the rest of the world. But instead of getting into entangling alliances with the rest of the world has led us to where we are today. Today we have our troops stationed in 130 nations. We have 720 foreign bases. And this is one reason why we have our massive financial deficits. And they're going to destroy this nation financially. And that is exactly what our leaders want, because they have an intense hatred of America, because America was founded by Christians. Not everybody was a Christian, but certainly we had a moral and Christian society for many years. Certainly you need, of course, to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you'd like to get the trilogy, America, the Secret of America's Beginning trilogy. They're available through Radio Liberty. We recommend the first three. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. And then, of course, please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. A little respite from the world of chaos. That's right. It just is so crazy out there. People are actually watching things on TV, telling them to go do things at airports that violate their Fourth Amendment. Incredible! Oh, it's just fine. It won't hurt you. Just violate your privacy and your child's and your husband's and your whatever. Unbelievable! We got to keep talking about this, listeners. The more people walk into that line, the more they would walk into a cyanide shower. Who knows? Who knows what they would walk into? They might even drink fluoride in their water. Oh, could it be? They might even have a neurotoxin in their food like aspartame. Could it be? How easy it is to get people to do it if you say, the government says it's okay. Beware of that statement. Welcome to the Power Hour today. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for caring about your world and wanting to know more. Wanting to know what the heck is going on. What is the president doing overseas? He's on the second stop of his four-country tour. What is he accomplishing other than spending a lot of money that could have saved a lot of homes here? Maybe even yours. You ought to be angry, but if you're not angry enough, nothing will happen. He's in Jakarta, Indonesia. They're going to have to cut it short a little bit because there's a bit of a volcano there. No comment. And they also had an earthquake over there. No comment. But the president is visiting his homeland of Indonesia, he says, where he grew up from 6 to 10 years of age. I don't know. I don't believe anything he says. It's not my fault. It's because he is the one that's done the double take on the people. Don't blame us for not trusting you, sir. 9/11 rescue workers, they are near a settlement, but they got to make a settlement real fast, real fast, real fast. Now, why would they have to make a real fast settlement after they've taken years? Remember, let's see, 2001. We are at 2010, moving into 2011. And no help for the rescue workers at 9/11? No, because we just use them whenever we need to use them. President stands up and says, the world will hear from us now. Mm-hmm. and the workers will die. And the Gulf War veterans will die. And then the Gulf War II veterans will die because they don't care. If they did care, it wouldn't take them 9 years to give them a settlement. Some of the rescue workers have already died from the illnesses they obtained while working in the Trade Center. You think how much toxin is there as a result of the computers, the plastics, the walls that were filled with who knows what? And now we've got terror alert, terror alert, terror alert. I love it when they come on TV and they say the world is still scared over those toner cartridge bombs. Really? I don't remember seeing any fright among the people. In fact, what I'm seeing is people aren't even taking you seriously. Government, they're not taking you seriously now because you've lied to us so many times. We figure the CIA put together those bombs, put them in some package somewhere, told us they came from Yemen when they really came from who knows where. Because we don't believe anything you say.